This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. The practice of mindfulness has grown across the country in the past few years. Here in Chattanooga, the Center for Mindful Living recently expanded its classes, creating a curriculum in mindfulness for newcomers. Stephanie Wilkins is the center's executive director, and Lauren Clifford is its director of center operations. Lauren, Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to be here.
Tell me about the center. It's been around for less than a decade, but it's come a long way.
Yeah, so the Center for Mindful Living has been around since 2013, but we've been on Main Street, just around the corner from here, about 4 years going on five, which is amazing. So the basic idea of the center was the women who created it wanted a space for like-minded individuals to come and explore the concept of mindfulness. They've offered different weekly classes there in the past. They've offered special workshops and series. And we offer different memberships as well so that people can come and enjoy these things.
And when we talk about mindfulness, it certainly has gotten a lot of attention, especially in the past few years. But for folks who may have heard the word and think of meditation, they think of breathing, but beyond that, they're a bit hazy.
Right.
What do you mean by mindfulness at the center? What do you provide?
Basically, what mindfulness is present moment awareness. And while that sounds very beautifully said, it's basically paying attention purposefully, right? So it could be meditation, but it could also be yoga. It could be forms of art. It could be forms of writing. As long as it is bringing you to the present moment, that is the concept of mindfulness. At the center, what we do offer, though, is traditional mindfulness courses and meditation classes, but we also want to try to bring more people into the fold where traditional seated meditation might not be their flavor. They might really connect with the movement of yoga. They might be interested in Qigong and the movement of energy and breath. They might be interested in learning how to reduce their stress very targeted. So we offer a variety of things to reach a variety of people.
And a lot of these disciplines that you just mentioned, they all come from different parts of Asia. Some of them may be household names to people, and some of them may not be. You also mentioned the word traditional. When we say traditional, how much of this is incorporating the cultural aspects of these disciplines, and how much of these are taking the steps, taking the process from these disciplines, but done in a way that's not connected with a certain religion or a certain spirituality?
So, of course, we have to honor where yoga and meditation and these practices come from. But really, it's nothing to do with religion. It's all about tools and resources to help you achieve the purpose of mindfulness, which is present moment awareness, self-reflection, understanding, compassion, non-judgment of where you are in this moment. So while it comes rooted in Buddhism or Hinduism, that's not how we necessarily teach it fully. Like I said, we honor it, but we are open to anybody's background. And really, it's more important for us to put forth these tools and their benefits.
And speaking of meditative, I recall from your site in the past few months, a Christian meditative prayer.
So that's one of the things I became the executive director back in the summer that I found most fascinating about the center is that it had multiple different offerings for people coming and sort of like meeting them where they are. Mm-hmm. So we have centering prayer, which obviously has more of a Christian base. And then we have the different other types of meditation classes. And we even have partner groups that also spend time in our center that are more focused on specific types of teaching. To us, like Lauren was saying, mindfulness is that present moment awareness. It doesn't really matter to us what brings people in. It just matters to us that they are there. Because those mindful tools, those are the things that people take into their lives and they take into their community, no matter where it came from, where the underlying teaching came from. It is deep-rooted in them to where they begin to take those mindful practices and tools, and then they begin to put them into their daily lives. Mm-hmm. And then we begin to see what that begins to create within someone, whether it's someone who has dealt with something in their life where they're needing to heal, whether it's someone who is going through chronic stress and is beginning to have health problems, whether someone just wants to lead a more engaged and fulfilled life. That's the part that we most focus on, is how we can help you be the best you. And then in turn, what that means for our whole community.
Mm-hmm. Being around less than a decade and in this part of the country, I'm sure that the center in getting off the ground faced its share of challenges in getting its message across.
You know, interestingly enough, those founding women had real intention behind this. I mean, they spent a couple of years, from what I have gathered, from just getting to know them and to know the beginnings of the center, some real intentional time. In my opinion, they were more on the forefront of what's considered the mindfulness movement, per se. And it's been really interesting to see over the course, especially these last few years, where it's really taken off, especially with some of the evidence-based practices or programs like the mindfulness-based stress reduction program that Jon Kabat-Zinn created, which is an incredible program, and we offer that program at the center. Realizing now that there is true evidence-based research that this changes people. And like I was mentioning to you earlier, you guys have had some things on NPR over the last couple of months. There was an article that was put out in the Journal of the American Medical Association talking about the impact of other types of treatments and modalities, but specific to mindful practices, what that's actually doing in helping people that are having to take opioids and pain. And we actually have some specific programs on pain management as it relates to mindful practice.
And a week doesn't go by where there is not a story about mindfulness, whether it's the examples you gave or it's companies that teach mindfulness classes in prisons, on and on and on.
In classrooms. Y'all had a story last week about that.
Mm-hmm. As a result of all that, you folks are upping your game in terms of the mindfulness offerings that you have.
Yes. One word that's really come to mind as we looked through 2020 and kind of what we wanted to do for our community is the word intention. And so we really have been looking very intentionally at our programming, on our memberships, at our space, and everything to really cultivate a more enhanced experience for our members and the community at large. So one thing we noticed is we have all these wonderful programs we're bringing, but there wasn't really this cadence or guideline of, if you start here, where do I go next and where could I go next? And so what we designed this year is intentionally with our core programming. So that is our series such as Introduction to Mindfulness, Mindfulness 101, Mindfulness 201, The Art and Practice of Happiness, and Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction. These are kind of our core mindfulness pillar series. We've developed a way of a cadence and a guideline where people know exactly where to start, and then shortly after, they'll have the next offering ready to go. So we've divided into two kind of overarching curriculum, but the beauty with all these programs is once you take the foundational, you're allowed to mix and match. You can take all of them, but we just kind of wanted to give people a jumping off point, whether they are completely new to the practice or they have a practice and they want to just deepen it with a more structured environment and a teacher that can support them.
And the center has been around since 2013, but the center did not invent this, and the center did not bring this to Chattanooga and the Tennessee Valley and the Southeast. This has been around this area longer than most people might think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think we, just like Lauren was mentioning earlier, there are different ways that people come to the practice, whether they are a person who just wants to sit and to meditate, whether it's someone who, I mean, goodness, look at Chattanooga. We are an amazing natural setting where people just want to be in nature, you know, taking a beautiful forest bath. We have such opportunity here for so much internal growth for people. But when we look at the different types of things that bring people to that, we want to offer them different things, mm-hmm. not just meditation, not just a specific type of meditation. We want to offer them the opportunity, if they want to do Qigong or movement, all of the different things that we offer, everything has a common thread, a common focus, which is mindfulness. And you're right, how people define mindfulness, everybody's like, well, what is mindfulness? And it seems like it's a very confusing thing for people to define. But for people that are in the mindful world, we get it. We're trying to be more in the moment. You and I are having a conversation right now, and I'm not thinking about what I'm going to do when I leave here. I'm having a conversation with you. And one of the interesting things, too, with the different practices that we do, it helps to teach you to be there. And then also, it's the time that you begin, like we said, those evidence-based things, it changes your mind. That's one of the things that so much research right now talks about, how people who have had meditation practices for periods of time, how when they do like a scan of their brain, things are different in their brain compared to someone who does not.
How the brain lights up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. In different areas of the brain, which is just fascinating, how we respond and how we deal with pain. Those are big things clearly that are in research right now. But then also looking at, too, with kids in schools, people that are dealing with chronic stress in the workplace, how that can benefit a company's bottom line.
How would you describe the community here, the people that come into the center? It might be easy to assume, oh, it's just people of a certain younger age. It might be people who have moved here from other parts of the country. Tell me more about the community that you're actually seeing showing up there.
Well, I think one of the reasons why we're changing our programming is to diversify that. We want to see varying ages of people. We want to see people that come from different ethnicities. We want to have, like, we offer something for everyone. We want everyone to feel open. Whether it's if you are a Christian and you want to come to a centering prayer class, or if you want to come to the insight meditation class, which has more of a deep-rooted Buddhism meaning. We want everyone to come. We want to see all different colors, all different religions, all different ages. And we're beginning to make some adjustments with the types of programs that we offer, but also with the timing of our programs. Because that's something that we've not probably had as much focus on in years past, that we really need to, if we really are a center to be there for people, we need to be there for the people. So we need to have classes that are offered multiple times during the day, which a lot of our classes have typically been offered during the day. So people who work, they really can't come.
And where can people go online for more information?
You can go to centermindfulliving.org. There's no four in it. You can also find us on Facebook at Center for Mindful Living and on Instagram. I post things often. And you can always sign up for our newsletter online as well. Or my personal favorite is I like to just invite people to come into the center, come have tea with us, and we can help you find exactly what you're looking for.
All right. Lauren, Stephanie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Even people who know CPR can freeze out of fear when they have to save their loved ones. Felicia Jackson knows that all too well. And what happened to her prompted her to create CPR Wrap, a disposable template that lays across a victim's chest and provides step-by-step instructions in CPR to any responder. Felicia dropped by Scenic Roots. Felicia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me how you came up with the idea for CPR Wrap.
Right. So my story goes back about 16 years ago. My family was on a ride just enjoying the day, and I have three children, married, and I happened to look back in the back of my seat because I call myself a helicopter mom. So I all the time just watching my children. But this particular time, my 2-year-old son was choking. It looked like he was in distress. So I screamed to my husband to pull over to the side of the road, and we both jump out. My husband immediately grabs him out of his car seat, hands him to me. I freeze. I'm CPR certified and I work in a hospital, so I should have known what to do.
But you're also the mother.
Yeah, I'm also a mom. Yeah. So my mom brain kicked in, whatever that is, but I just saw my son dying in a sense, and I couldn't do anything about that. So my husband saw that I was freezing up, and he took our son and saved his life. And from there, I thought, well, after I read up on my CPR training, I got retrained for that, of course. But then I thought, if something like this could happen to me, a medical professional, what about the non-medical people that don't have a clue about what to do? And so I invented CPR Wrap.
And then describe how it works.
So CPR Wrap is a disposable all-in-one template that has a one-way valve mouth barrier for rescue breathing. It has visual hand placements that shows you exactly where to do your compressions and simple four-step instructions that lets you know how to perform CPR. And so you have that full-over barrier from mouth to torso, and it just takes away the what-ifs. It's very simple. A child could actually use the wrap.
And how large is this to carry around until when you may need to use it?
So the packet is totally compact. That was one of the main things that I wanted. It's small enough to fit in a purse. I mean, it's 3x5. It's a few inches width and length. You can put it on a carabiner, put it on a bag, put it next to a phone. It can actually fit inside a first aid kit.
How many years has it been around now?
We're at our fourth year now. Yeah, so we've been around for 4 years. We really started selling the product and really getting it out there for maybe 2.5 years. Once I was able to rebrand and really focus on who I needed to get the wrap in the hands of.
And who are you getting it in the hands of?
We have partnered with hospitals, school systems, CPR training facilities, which is really big because they already train the people who we're looking for. And so once they get their certification, they give them a CPR wrap, which is amazing. Hospitals use us as a branding tool and also to give back to people before they are discharged in the hospital. Cardiac rehabilitation or respiratory. And so before they DC and they have training with their caregivers, they give them a CPR wrap. So there's so many places that you can actually use this product.
And how far? Chattanooga, Hamilton County, beyond?
Oh, beyond. We're international. I smile when I say that because I cannot believe it myself. We're all over the United States. We're in South Africa. We're in Europe. We just did a licensing deal with the country of Turkey. Yeah.
And what are you hearing from all these places who are now using this? What are you learning from them?
So I always tell people, I cannot wait. I hate to say this, but I mean, that's the ultimate validation is when one of those people actually use CPR wrap to save a life. That's what I'm looking for. But when they actually get the product, like we just signed on, or we're getting ready to sign on another police department really soon. And his thing was, I cannot believe I did not think of this. I hear that all the time. This is a product that's so simplistic, but so needed. And they feel better. They're more empowered now that they have the CPR wrap.
How do you have to vary the product depending on where you're selling it? Because you say that you're international. That's where things like language come into play.
Right, right. And that was another great thing about the simplicity of CPR wrap is we can translate into any language. That's not a problem at all. We just verify the language because there's so many languages out there. We verify the language they want it in, and we do the printing on the wrap and the packaging. We just do our due diligence and see, you know, they don't use inches. They may use another type of measurement. So we just make sure we are aligned with whatever they need.
And I read that you gave a TEDx talk.
I did.
Tell me about that.
Oh, my goodness. It was amazing. Okay, so I call myself an introvert. And now I'm not, of course, anymore because I talk about this all the time. But doing that TEDx talk, it was just unreal. I was terrified, but I was so happy my children were out in the audience, you know, looking at me, rooting me on. And when I was done, because I actually did it at Baylor High School, and to see people come up to me, tears in their eyes, telling me, you know, how grateful that they are that I actually invented this and how it's going to save lives. It was like I'm in heaven. I'm in heaven, and I'm so happy I was able to do it.
So what's next?
The skies cannot begin to stop what I have in store for CPR wrap. I mean, we want to take this into the stratosphere. I mean, as high as I possibly can. I want every home, business, vehicle, everyone. When you think of health and safety, I want you to think of CPR wrap.
And what help are you getting to spread this far and wide?
In the very beginning, I got great resources from SCORE of Chattanooga, CoLab, Launch of Chattanooga, and most recently the Incubator and TechStars, because I just got back from TechStars last year. We did. Those were our first, I say, cheerleaders. And it didn't just stop when we started CPR wrap. It's carried over through our good times, through our bad times, and right up till today. And so those same people that I reached out to help me start this business are there today. And those are the people that are helping us get the help that we need.
And how big is the business at this point?
So we're still, of course, a small business. You know, just because we have some sales, you know, you don't hire everybody you know. I had to learn that the hard way. But right now we have 2 full-time, and we do have some people that we contract with. Like we have 3 contract salespeople, people with press, PR. We're growing. We're growing, and we're going to continue to grow.
That's a whole nother learning curve on top of the other learning curves that you've been on to make this a reality.
It really is. I said, you never stop learning. I'll never, because it's funny, there's a lot that I can tell people, and you know, because of what I've learned in the amount of time that I've had my own business, but I still am amazed with so much I don't know. And I'm taking it all in. So I'm going to forever be learning as long as I have a business.
And since this started with something that happened in your family, how has the family been taking this all in?
Oh, I know. This may seem kind of macabre, but when I was somewhere and this guy asked me, have you thanked your son? And I said, thank my son for what? He said, because he choked. If he would not have choked, you wouldn't have had this idea. And it was like, yeah, you're right. But they're looking at me with, I hope, and I know, they're proud of their mom. And that makes me feel so happy. I did not have anyone in my life that ever started a business or ever sold a business, ever did anything as far as business was related to. I'm the first. And I hope that I will not be the last. I know I won't be the last when it comes to my family.
Another way to be a role model.
Exactly. Exactly.
Where can people go online for more information?
You can go online to www.cprwrap.com to find out more. We have an amazing video that you can see that shows you how to perform the CPR with the CPR wrap. So they can definitely go there.
All right. Felicia, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
The Chattanooga Sustainable Food Center aims to increase access to locally grown food, provide nutrition education, and spur engagement with agriculture in our region. Holly Martin recently founded the center and serves as its director. Holly, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
How did you come up with the idea for the center?
Well, I have worked in food my whole career. I started out as a nutritionist working clinical nutrition at a hospital. And then I moved on from there to work for a really long time at the Chattanooga Area Food Bank, working for food insecure clients, working with clients that were needing services from a food pantry that were in a type of emergency food situation where they were finding that they didn't have any food in their pantries when they got home. So I helped with programming for the food bank for a long time, food demonstrations, nutrition education. And then I had an opportunity to work for the Main Street Farmers Market as a market manager. And it was during that time that I felt there was something a little bit more, some sort of movement that I wanted to kind of encapsulate our food system into this local food resource center is what I called it. So it became the Chattanooga Sustainable Food Center. It focuses on three major parts of the food system: access, because access, food access, especially to healthy and affordable food, is something that a lot of people in our community don't have. And education is another thing that I was trying to address, because even if the access piece was fixed overnight, there's a huge educational gap where people don't know how to cook. And that goes beyond any sort of socioeconomic background. It's not just a low-income population that is suffering from that gap in education. You know, there's people that don't know that a cucumber becomes a pickle. You know, there's people that have had guacamole, but they've never even seen an avocado. So I wanted to try to do those two big pieces and then also include an engagement piece, because we are all part of a food system. We all are plotted on a point and we're participating in it whether we know it or not. And I wanted everyone to know where their place is. And if they didn't know where their place is, I wanted to have speakers and events and opportunities for them to continually be engaged in their food system and know that they're sort of a cog in this wheel and they have a voice and a place in making changes in it.
You talk about access, and that brings to mind food deserts, which we have here in Chattanooga.
We do. I hear a lot about food deserts. I think it's something that has come onto the consciousness, especially in our community, that there are, especially in the downtown area, you would identify them as an urban food desert, meaning that, you know, finding fresh, healthy, affordable food is not something that is readily available. And Chattanooga is actually one of the worst in the country as far as food deserts go, according to statistics that I read just recently. And that just contributes to a whole horde of really awful health statistics that just keep getting worse, especially in minority populations. And so I really feel like food deserts are not entirely about food, because there's just a lot of other pieces that go into that puzzle, that in a food desert, you're going to find other resources that are lacking. It's not just food. So it's sort of a part of a bigger piece of that puzzle to work out in our community.
They're just one symptom.
It's actually a symptom. It's definitely a symptom of poverty.
When you talk about the engagement piece, explain what you mean by plotting people on the food system.
I think the engagement piece can go a long way. For instance, I have a speaker coming in from Nashville at the end of the month, and he has formed a business on edible landscaping, whereas you're just planting things in your yard that you can eat. Blueberry bushes, you could plant grapes. So, you know, it goes a little bit beyond just planting like a tomato garden in the summertime. That is an engagement piece. Actually, the first kickoff event that I did for the food center was having 6 different speakers, a very diverse background, some even international, that just talked about their food experiences as they grew up, if they grew up in a food secure environment, if they grew up in an environment that was really bountiful and really appreciated food, or if they grew up on TV dinners and their parents didn't really care to impart cooking education into them. And I got a really great response to that, and it just made me want to do more engagement type opportunities. And I think engagement can also be advocacy, advocating for our food system. We want good food. We want to work with farmers. We want to see restaurants that are actively seeking to put local food on their menus. We want to support those type of establishments.
Not just a high-end farm-to-table restaurant, but also quality access to that food.
Absolutely. I think when you start an organization or, you know, a nonprofit, a social cause, you're identifying a problem and that you're proposing solutions, hopefully, to those problems that you feel like you can help to solve. And so I hope this food center touches everyone because we all eat multiple times a day. I saw things happening around the country and food systems change that I wasn't seeing in Chattanooga as much. And I thought, I don't know if I want to be the person to start this, but I think I need to maybe kick the ball down the road just a little bit. I've gotten a great response to it. It seems like everyone has something to say about it, which I think is fantastic because we all have an opinion and an entitlement when it comes to our food choices.
And tell us more about the event at the end of the month and where people can go online for more information.
It's called Edible Landscaping, and the business is Nashville Foodscapes. I actually heard this gentleman speak at the PIC Tennessee conference last year, and he has this business. I think it's doing very well in Nashville, where he does design and installation of edible landscapes into people's personal property, but also businesses. And he was very charismatic and very passionate about what he does. And the event you can find on Eventbrite, it's called Edible Landscapes with Nashville Foodscaping. There's 200 tickets. They're about halfway sold. They're free, but you just have to claim a ticket on Eventbrite to come to the event. We're going to have drinks and some light bites, and it's just going to be a slide presentation, and he's going to take questions at the end. But I think it'll be, if you're interested in maybe just stepping a little bit deeper into what you can grow in your own yard or your business, I think it would be a great event to come to.
And when is this?
This is March 31st at 6 o'clock. It's at the Edney downtown.
And where can people go online for more information about the center?
The center, we have a website, chatfoodcenter.org. We are also on Facebook under Chattanooga Sustainable Food Center and also on Instagram under Chat Food Center.
All right. Holly, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Ray.
You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. Our show is produced by Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, and Will Davis from the studios of WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Follow us on Twitter at scenicroots423 and email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Also, follow WUTC on Facebook and Instagram and listen online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. Join us again next time for Scenic Roots.